Talk Football with Coach K continues. ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. And joining the program, Coach, is Bill Carr. He is the former athletic director of the University of Florida, former athletic director of Houston, as well as a former player with the Florida Gators. It's a pleasure to have Bill on, and he's currently an executive coach for professional development and career guidance for current and aspiring leaders in intercollegiate athletics. Bill, thank you for joining. Coach, you can take it away.
I want to jump on these other issues that we just mentioned briefly at the beginning of the our teammates at Pensacola High School quite a few years ago, longer than we'd like to admit, and at University of Florida. And at Florida, and Bill, we had a chance to talk about some issues that are now well known in the news and prevalent, and something that I have feared all along. I'm not a pessimist person. I'm an optimist by nature, and I hate to be pessimistic, but I have to be honest about it, and I will tell you up front, I'm rather pessimistic about the outlook for college athletics right now. I understand that there may be solutions that can be at least something that would mitigate the damage, but I can't see it all clear right now. But the NIL laws, the gambling, legal gambling in college athletics, and the portal, the transfer portal, to me, any one of the three could be deadly for college athletics, as we know it, true amateurism and other most admirable things that we think about when we think about college athletics. But the combination of the three has me extremely concerned about where we go from here. We couldn't have, this is the most applicable to have you on today, someone who talks to the administrations around the country and college, and a consultant too. And I'm sure these problems have been talked about and addressed in some way. So if you could maybe just take off and talk about this with our audience out there, it's certainly something that a lot of people should be concerned about.
Well, thank you, Kay. I very much appreciate the invitation to be on your fine show and to be able to address the wonderful people there in Pensacola, one of my favorite places in the world. I certainly did. Our family enjoyed our time there during our junior high and high school years, and going to Pensacola High, being your teammate with so many wonderful people at a great time, and we just really appreciate the chance to share some thoughts here now looking at intercollegiate athletics. And, Kate, you are correct in saying that intercollegiate athletics has its issues looking ahead, without a doubt. And the NIL is simply one of those, when I say simply, I don't mean in a complexity standpoint. I mean it is a profound change if and when it happens, and the if is minimal, the when is imminent. I mean, it's going to happen very soon. The state law in Florida and four other states, Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, New Mexico, and Florida, have a law that goes into effect July 1 of this year. And the NCAA is hustling around now trying to make up for lost time, delaying what has become inevitable, that the NIL names, image, and likeness opportunity for student athletes to make some dollars off of their notoriety as athletes, that is going to go into effect. And I agree with you, Kay, that if we could avoid that, we should. And I think that's why the NCAA has been dragging its feet. But the bottom line is, just as the United States Olympics and most of the Olympics in the world has absorbed amateur status, allowing names, image, and likeness profiteering, if you will, to make dollars off the fact that you can endorse a product, but you're not an employee of who you're representing in the Olympics, but you are able to find out if you can endorse a product and make a profit off of that. You can keep those revenues. That is what is happening with intercollegiate athletics. Now, Kay, the most complicated part of it is not simply that it is crossing the barrier between amateur definition that we've had historically, but also that in the United States, this law, these laws, I should say, are plural in the sense that it is a state's right issue. It's so every state has their own laws with regard to how this names, image, and likeness process is going to work within that state. And that becomes a huge problem, as you can appreciate, Kay, because bottom line is then some states can be more permissive and some more restrictive, and all of a sudden you have a recruiting disadvantage in one state versus the other, and that becomes destructive to the equal opportunity dynamic, if you will, between one state and the next. So we're hopeful that some type of federal law is going to be passed so that there is a standard that is uniform throughout the United States, so that whatever you can get in California is the same you can get in New York and the same you can get in Florida and any point in between. And those are some of the complex legal, political issues that are being determined as we speak. And, you know, it's you get into the political arena in today's world especially, and it's extremely complex. But those things are coming into focus, and like I said, the Florida law and those other four states are going to go into effect July the 1st, and the NCAA is trying to pull itself together in terms of how it's going to respond to that. Other states are going to create those laws as well, but we do know, for example, that right here in the state of Florida, that's going to crank up pretty soon. So I'll pause and see if you have any questions or comments about what I've described here in the initial aspect of names, image, and likeness, or better known as NIL.
Well, let's break it down, Bill, just a little. For example, the question of equity. You can see right off the bat. Now, you also have to understand that there are over 150 so-called platforms, 150 platforms already in place to initiate this NIL law. Okay, take advantage.
Yes.
In other words, take advantage of the kids and get them branded and associated with different products and all the other things that generate revenue. Why would entrepreneurs and large companies go to bat and form these platforms if just for the sake of being good guys? It doesn't happen that way.
No, it doesn't.
Money involved.
That's right.
There are going to be agents involved. There are going to be lawyers involved. There are going to be tons of people trying to profit in some way from this law. You can bet on that. Now, back to the equitability standpoint. From a standpoint of equal treatment. A company, let's just break it down to its barest essential. A company, you have a Coca-Cola or whomever, you have a company, a product, and you want to brand it with a certain player. Are you going to brand it with the left guard? Or are you going to brand it with the quarterback who's an outstanding player, or the running back,
right,
or the receiver? The left guard and the right tackle on defense aren't going to be sought after by anyone for the sake of profit. So
yes, I understand.
Now, there is something Georgia just passed. I don't know if you're familiar with.
Yes, I'm familiar Georgia. With that. That new law in Georgia.
Okay, I could see where we just went through this. I could see where there might be a way to escrow those dollars and then be distributed equitably to all of the football players as if it came from a football player or players. But you can't have that money. It's not going to stand up. These people aren't going to let it stand up if they're going to equally disperse it to every athlete on the college campus. They'll be down to $3.25 per person. That's not going to happen. But
well, those are possibilities, Kay, that you have accurately identified. The issue of self-interest becomes a factor in any part of life when you get dollars involved, and so those are things that have to be resolved looking ahead. And I don't think anyone can predict with precision exactly how that's going to happen, but it will be complicated because of the self-interest dynamic and, the appeal of a famous player, who touches the ball and scores touchdowns is going to be much greater than someone who just plays in the line of scrimmage and either blocks or tackles. But you have accurately identified what those issues are.
Well, there may be some solution, but as it stands right now, there would have to be much more clarification on how this distribution would happen. I could maybe see where you could escrow the money and the football player, everything that came into a football player or players, then would be distributed among the football team. Okay, and same with basketball for the basketball players. Other than that, you're not going to, the girl golfer is not going to get many, is not going to have much demand for NIL revenue coming in. But having said that, you brought up an interesting subject as we were just chatting about this, I think, yesterday a little. The coaches' salaries are one thing that has maybe created this desire by the athletes and by the prompting, through the prompting of other profiteers, hey, go get yours, Look what Coach so-and-so is getting. Yeah, it's exorbitant. There's no doubt about it. I readily admit it's exorbitant. But you're familiar with the axiom, you're worth what the market will bear.
That's right.
And let me tell you, you look at, I just recently read a study done on Saban at the University of Alabama. And truthfully, the money that he is responsible for bringing into the University of Alabama, he's probably underpaid. There's no way they could do. There's no way they could duplicate the amount of revenue that the University of Alabama is getting because of that football program, because of Saban, primarily. There's no other device, person, or issue that could be is available to them to generate that type of revenue. And when we say revenue, we're not talking about just the athletic department. I was astounded at the number of dollars that are going to the different schools, engineering, the medicine, the scholarships for needy students, academic requirements, and so on. Those monies would not be there. And I'm familiar with Arkansas, talking to Frank Broyles. When they dropped out of the Southwest Conference and lost Texas, with their big rival, they lost so much money in revenue from all those people that would donate money to Arkansas just to beat Texas. And when it fell off so drastically because they weren't playing Texas anymore.
Right.
Just one example. They had to go hire, I think, $2 or $3 million a year. They were paying some marketing firm in Dallas just to try to make up some of the difference when they left the Southwest Conference. So anyway, there's some interest there. So you can't put an athlete or an athlete's worth to a university on the same footing as you could a successful coach. Even though I think the coach's salaries are exorbitant, you know.
Well, the whole it's one of the things that creates a lot of criticism and pressure, criticism of the current system of NCAA football is its tax-exempt status and the fact that, that coaches and some administrators are being compensated multiple millions of dollars, and when a coach gets fired, you know, like Gus Malzahn was just fired from Auburn, and his payout was about $20 million from Auburn. And, you know, for him to be able to get that kind of a payout and the student-athlete cannot get more than just a scholarship at the university, that creates a whole sense of outrage and political momentum to change the law and make colleges pay players as employees, pay them a fair wage for generating the interest in the program. But I'm of the opinion, and there are many others on both sides of the issue, of course, but many others in the industry especially that agree that if we go into compensating our student-athletes, our coaches, our current players, if we go to paying them as employees, it will destroy the appeal, the enterprise of intercollegiate athletics in a foundational way. I sincerely believe that because I think that the amateur experience of being a student athlete within the higher education system of America is a unique leadership laboratory. I even use the term crucible to describe how that develops leaders for our nation and that we really need them. I don't mean those as empty words of position, but I think that one of the things that is going to be resolved over the next several years is whether or not we're going to keep the amateur model in place. And it's going to be a very, very tough situation. It'll become very political, and Congress will be involved in making whatever decision is made. Congress is going to be involved in it. We'll see what happens, but I'm very hopeful that we can keep the amateur model because I think it is essential to maintaining the unique arrangement we have. There's no other country in the world that has amateur athletics associated with colleges and universities. We are the only country in the world, but I think there are some things we have to do to protect that because I think it is so vital to the leaders that come out of those activities. And that's my personal / professional opinion, but we'll see what happens.
Well, you know, I've got a personal / opinion as well. And I'm wondering when a college education, totally paid for, room and board, books, the association and the networking done for future, all of the ancillary results from a college education is not worth the price of the paper that it's written on. It's not worth anything. Some of these kids now, you to college education, say, well, you're getting all this, and they don't even want to hear that. It's like a slap in the face.
Well, Kay, I agree with you. Those are troubling issues, to say the least. And the one that concerns me the most is the legalized sports wagering. The Supreme Court 2 years ago ruled that the federal government was unconstitutional for the federal government to control gambling across the nation, that it is in fact a state's right. And so that's what has happened, and it is now legal for a state to pass the law. And there are some states where that has now in effect, but it is yet ahead of us as to how it's going to affect intercollegiate athletics, but that's going to be starting very soon. I think of all the issues that the intercollegiate athletic game faces, I think the sports wagering situation, making it legal, bringing it into the front living room and to the main function of our society, I think is an enormous challenge, because it will victimize student athletes, because they will be under pressure from various nefarious agents and other elements in the gambling world to miss a free throw. They'll be told, well, you don't have to make your team lose. Just make sure you don't win by more than X number, whatever the spread is. And so those kind of things will be happening, and sometimes those situations can just become a like your term, Kay, is correct. It's a cancer. And it remains to be seen how it is handled, but I think it just is going to be very, very difficult to properly control that situation when it is such a part of the mainstream enterprise of our country. And I fear for the integrity of the game, because what is best for the gaming industry, if you will, for gambling, is not necessarily what is best for the athletic games, for football and basketball and track and tennis and golf, whatever, baseball, whatever sport it is. If you manage your activity to comply with constraints and concerns about the gaming, the bets, you're going to lose your focus on intercollegiate athletic competition. And so those are real issues for us. The other thing you mentioned quickly, I'll just throw it out there, is this transfer portal, where student athletes are able now to transfer and be eligible immediately. Immediately. If you transfer from Alabama, you can transfer to the University of Tennessee and play the next season for another school in the SEC. It's unthinkable, but that is where we are. I can understand how we have to give athletes the opportunity to relocate, just like a coach has a chance to relocate from Alabama to Tennessee, for example. That can happen. But it creates a different dynamic in the locker room. All told, Kay, what is really happening is that the job of being a head coach and being an athletic director at the college level is going to be so much more complicated than it ever has been in its history, that it's going to be a job that is going to require enormous skill and patience and empathy and intellect and timing, good judgment. It's going to be a tougher job than it is even today.
Well, I certainly couldn't agree with you more, and I'm sure there are going to be some solutions that are equitable and don't cast too much doubt on the game, but there are going to be other situations, Bill, I think we both recognize, that are not going to be looked on favorably by large segment of the population, no doubt about it. And when it becomes popular or a thing that you can do, it's like equating a coach's salary to what the players get when they think that there's another way to make money off the game that supposedly they're holding up, which I don't buy that at all. I don't think, listen, this game would be here, the NFL would be here, If these players that are playing right now and have played in the last few years and will play in the next few years, if they weren't even born or not around, it's still going to happen. The game's still going to be there. I just hope it's there in the form that we all appreciate and respect. And I still think the college campus should be a bastion for integrity. And it's certainly taking on a different flavor right now.
Well, let me ask the challenges are real, okay? They are very real, as you're saying. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and it's not meant to be overly pessimistic. It's just a concern. This is something that that is a great concern, and it's our hope that we can find a way. I understand that Saban is working overtime on solutions for exactly the issues that we've been talking about. We'll see what happens there. And he probably, if anybody would come up with something that at least would pass scrutiny, some scrutiny, it would probably be him. Let me ask you one other question.
Yes, sir.
The Pac-12, I think, or Pac-10, they're talking about, they were talking about a new commissioner. And supposedly Oliver Luck, who I know you know, and Oliver has done a great job everywhere he's been, and has hit just about all of the necessary levels that you could ask a guy to be qualified for a job like that. But now they're talking about, or maybe have hired,
they have
an entertainment czar from Bally's, or one of the Vegas type entertainment groups. Where are we going there?
Well, that's an interesting question. The gentleman, I don't know him. I just saw the information last night online and this morning in the newspaper about the person, and I don't know him. I have never heard of him. George Klevov or something like that. I don't know the exact pronunciation, but he has a variety of in his background. He's worked for different television entities. He's worked for major corporations, and he's worked most recently for the MGM Hotel enterprise. And so he's got a lot of experience with the gambling because, you know, in Las Vegas, MGM is huge in the casino business. And so he has just been hired, and in fact, already had something in this morning's paper about the position of the Pac-12 supporting the expansion of the college football playoff from four teams to a larger number. And, you know, I was surprised to see him speaking so quickly on such a significant subject. Obviously, he had nothing to do with that decision, but he's promulgating that information. He must feel that it's appropriate for him to speak very quickly. So it is it's indicative of where the industry is. The gentleman that they've had for the last 12 years at that league, at the Pac-12, came from a different industry as well. He had been in the tennis, women's tennis industry for a long time. And his tenure was, shall we say, clouded. You know, some of the judgments he made were not quite effective for the Pac-12. But we'll see what happens. But you are correct in what you said about them having made their decision at the Pacific 12 Conference.
Yeah, you know, it's got to be strange to see. I just get the feeling that there's certain things happening that would not have happened before, that the door is being opened, even if it's a crack, it's being cracked open for a different, maybe even a different type approach to the game, which I'm not sure that I like. I hate to be pessimistic like that, but I just have to be honest about it. We better be very, very careful with how this is handled. I think it's something that everybody, excuse me, should be concerned about. And let me ask you about the portal. One thing, last thing, your bill.
Yes, sir.
To me, what message are we sending when there are now over 3,000 kids who have entered the portal?
The transfer portal, yes.
I would have ever thought. possible. What message are we sending? Because when you, gosh, I can remember the thrill, I'm sure you did, just having the opportunity for a college scholarship. My goodness, what a gift. What a great thing that was. And now that's to be looked on as a, don't hand me that, give me the money. You know, and but entering the portal, excuse me, when you have accepted a college scholarship, you enter into a contract with the university and they with you. And what are we teaching when it's so easy just to say, well, I want to go somewhere else?
Well, I think it is. I think it's unfortunate, if not even more severe than that, that so many people are turning away from a commitment of loyalty and trying to be more expedient in how they go about living their lives. I think that the need for commitment and to sustain our commitments, you know, is something we have to teach. And I think it's all the more reason why we need the right kind of people in leadership roles as head coaches and as athletic administrators, is to demonstrate those qualities of commitment and effort. I know I heard a program just recently where Roy Williams, the head basketball coach at North Carolina for so many years, just recently retired, and he made the comment that in his 31 years as a head coach at the NCAA Division I level, he had 7 transfers total with eligibility remaining. In 31 years, 7. And in the last 2 years, so that gives him 33 years as a head coach at the college Division I level, in the last 2 years, he had 6 alone in that 2-year period. 7 years over 31 years and 6 over the last 2. I think that's why he retired. So it's a huge challenge looking ahead in the industry. And in fact, one of the things I'm doing now, Kay, I haven't had a chance to inform you about this, but I'm just now starting a new enterprise to provide professional development and career guidance to people working in college athletics who want to be leaders. I've just started an online enterprise called Athletics Career Sphere, and that's what I'm going to be doing, is trying to instill some values to clarify and to focus some instruction on some practical guidance for people wanting to be head coaches and ADs to help them be prepared for these challenges, because it is, the business is so much more complex than it was in years past.